Recording in progress.
Sahana vavatu, sahanao bhunaktu, sahaviryankaravavahai, tejasvinavaditamastomavidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai
Maharaj Ki. Maharaj, is it okay if I make one question in the beginning?
Yes, please.
You mentioned these models, three, educational, political, and the commercial one. So the where in those educational, the protection fits in? Is it part of the goal or is it just part of the operation in the political one? Is of course part of the goal.
It'll just naturally be is that as you go down, then they include less. So the Brahminical, it's about the, you know, specifically about the training and raising in consciousness. It's about affecting the consciousness, uplifting the consciousness. And then to do that, people have to be in a protected environment. It has to be, you have to have, facilities and all that, right? So it's natural. The Brahminical one can include the Kshatriya and Vaishya. The Kshatriya one, then, you know, it may not include the Brahminical, but it naturally means if you create a protected environment, economics will flourish. Well, then in the, if you take the Vaishya one, then it's going to be just about economics being the goal. So that's where it becomes weak, because the protection of the people is not part of their program. If by not protecting the people they'll make more profit, they're easily going to do that. You know, so that's the thing, is whatever makes profit for them, that's the whole point. Like you see, is that a vaccine is out and then politics is made not to use that vaccine. Why? Because then, you know, our vaccine will be used. And so then so many people can't get a vaccine because of these politics between these companies. Why? Not to protect the people, not to uplift their consciousness, just so they can make more money. So that's why then the corporate one has to be controlled by the administrative one. Because otherwise, they'll sell their grandmother if it'll make profit. You know? So that's the whole thing, is there's no limit to what they will do to make profit. And even if the whole rest of the world crashes, as long as their little world and that remains, they're fine with that. So you have to have that. But then in managing, if it's only managing and that goes smooth, but you're not uplifting the consciousness, it's still not enough. That's why the educational. So in the Varnashram system, all these things are there perfectly. If you establish the Brahminical will automatically establish the Kshatriyas, who will create the environment. Vaishya Shudras will happen anyway. If there's an opportunity, they'll take it. Right? Shudras want money, Vaishyas are making money, so they'll work for them. Right? If there's a good environment, then the Vaishyas can trade in that. You can see, if there's a peaceful environment, trade goes on. But you see now, in various parts of the world, people are rioting and looting and that. How do you run businesses? You know, it's really hard to run a business when today, when I close shop, everything's in the shop, and when I come tomorrow morning, there's nothing in the shop and the whole mall's been burnt down. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that without the control of the government, then it won't work. So that's why it's so important. So you know, and that, again, addressing that question that, that Gurudas Prabhu had mentioned on that, on I think on the second day, is that, well, what's the Vedic, you know, natural form of this strategic planning? It's called Varnashram. But since, you know, if you use Varnashram, everyone flips out. But if you use strategic planning, oh, then that's good. But it's just natural. The Brahmins create the educational and improvement of the consciousness, which is happening because Kshatriyas are protecting the environment and that. Because, and then in that, the Vaishyas, then they are making money, they're paying their taxes, they're giving in charity. So the whole thing works very, very nicely. But in here, the point that's being brought out is that the Brahminical culture is the most important, because that's the universal aspect that applies to everyone. So the ashram system, everybody uses. And then because of that, everybody... So Vaishnavas are Brahmins because they know Brahman. Right? And then according to nature, they're going to engage themselves accordingly. Right? If they can just do their nature, they'll do that. If they can't, they'll do next best. If they can't do that, then they'll do the next best after that. You know, someone's a Brahminical nature, he can't do that. Then he might be doing business, he might be doing this, that, so many different things. Whatever it takes to maintain himself in Varna so that in ashram he can live his Brahminical lifestyle. Right? So therefore protection, that is the Kshatriyas, that's their business. Right? So you see, is the direct protection will be done by, you know, your presidents, your project leaders, whoever's heading up something, whoever is, you know, managerially is in charge of something or administratively in charge, they protect those who work with them, those who work under them. But the direction for that, that it does go on nicely, is therefore then the Brahminical aspect that we have the strategy of everyone trying to become Krishna conscious. Because that's something you can always obtain. Everyone can become Krishna conscious. You can't guarantee that everybody's going to be a billionaire. Right? So that everyone will be very prosperous in this, that you can't guarantee. Right? But you can make it at least as nice as possible, so it's as least trouble as possible. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maharaj, as a continuity of that, I thought, you know, what is actually the proper system in Varnasram to put the leaders and managers, meaning the right persons, to the right post? Because, like, let's say, you know, the karmis, like even in this building, they have such a, if there is a process of somebody gets any post, there is such a clear requirement of the ability to cooperate, the educational, the application before the criminal register, the so many things. But like in our case, many times it's just, you know, somebody gains something, so let's do some politics, move him out, or somebody creates a manager of great depth, so then it's time to delegate or things like that. Swatama has also warned about a few things before he left. He said he took this Prabhupada statement that this movement will be destroyed only if there was what he called the Kalichalas, they are taking the positions of the leadership. As well, for me, it took quite time. He ordered me to get married in 2007. It took me much longer to understand that there are actually demons in our movement in the leadership positions. So how to avoid that, and how to, let's say, frankly,
The thing what you're dealing is, you don't have to have someone who is, they themselves are a committed demon. A Kali Chela simply means that Kali takes advantage of their, misdirected understanding or consciousness and furthers his work, right? Because Kali Raj, he's in charge of Kali Yuga. And Kali, the four different yugas are there because people have different levels of consciousness of what they're interested in. Right? At a particular time and space, then, you know, you have that cycle of samsara. It's going around, and some people are more near the top, some people are going towards the bottom. So you want to have that position that a living entity can be satisfied in that particular position. Because satisfied means they get the position they want. They'll never be satisfied. You're in the material world. So then he takes advantage. Just like, let's say, a crowd is there. And because the crowd is there, then criminals can go into the crowd. So it's not that the crowd is criminal, but the criminal things can take shelter of a crowd. So in the same way, is it's not that when you say Kali Chelas, that it means that the person themselves is a dedicated follower of Kali Raj. It just means that they're by some mistake allowing themselves to be influenced by the modes of nature, that they do things that aren't necessarily beneficial for the movement. So that same person then by good association becomes more clear on that subject. He's no longer a Kali Chela. So that would be a better way to look at it, that we, no one wants to act in a way that the modes of nature get the upper hand, and we act in a way that's not beneficial for ourselves or for others. Right? Because with that, then it doesn't create all this difference here, because we're focused on the soul from the capacity that they're servant of Krishna and how to reestablish themselves in service to Krishna. Right? Just an educational mode, structure can just focus on that you're the soul and that's all the farther they're trying to get you. So the Mayavadis, how they'll be using it, or the Buddhists, and that's all the farther they'll take. For your fruitive workers, education will be, how to be pious, how to be God conscious, but only as much as will get you good profits. So you see, pious religious people and things like that, they tend to only take education up to there. How far education is useful for us to make material benefit. Then you see in the modern scenario, then education is being used to further the particular social, political, economic position that those in leadership feel is useful. It won't be theistic. So we see is here is that when we're saying it's an educational model, but it's a Vaishnav educational model. So that means we're educating up to the people up to the level of pure consciousness, of pure devotional service. So that kind of position, that becomes of the real value. So then in that, then you need to have a protected environment. That's where anybody in the operational, they're supposed to create the environment for everybody to have an opportunity in Krishna consciousness. And then you see by the efforts of the tactical, elements, they create the profit or the prosperity of those operational units by either improving the quality of the manpower, by money, by facilities, by, like that. And then the tactical, that just assists in getting these things done. So it's just Varnashram. But the problem is that you present it as Varnashram, there's already a problem with Varnashram that some devotees don't see the importance or don't know how it works. And so, therefore, no use in trying to present it from that position. Otherwise, as soon as you understand, because Manu talks about the relationship between the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, if that's correct, everything else will work. right? Everything else works, right? Even you just have a criminal society, they'll create within themselves their own structures, their own things. They'll create the economics and everything like that. So that Vaishya Shudra element will be, they'll have all the things. But it's like the modern, it has all four of the positions in Varnashram, but the emphasis is on the economic. So therefore, education supports the economic, the general people supports the economic, administration about the economic. So whatever's good for economics, that's what flies. Right? Well, if you go back further in history, then it would be about what would be supportive of administration. And so economics and the people have to support administration. The intellectual has to support administration. But in the Vedic, then it's all about everybody coming to that transcendental platform. So that's the main thing. Everything's supporting that. But in so doing, you need all four platforms. But you have to know the hierarchy. For money, you can't break down administration or knowledge, right? And the same time is, then, you know, so higher than the economics will be administration, but you can't take what's good for administration but mad for consciousness. So you have to see, consciousness will be first, knowledge, consciousness, then the administrative, then the economic, and then, skills. You know, practical skills. That will always be the bottom. So we see everybody has that, right? Means the Brahmin, he organizes himself, he has his economics that he makes, and he has his skills. But it's all in pursuance of that transcendental knowledge. So therefore, all devotees, even if their conditioned nature is of a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they're still using that for elevating their consciousness in Krishna consciousness. That's the uniqueness of the Daiva Varnashram system. It's the only system that's actually equal, because it addresses, see, your modern context of equal means everybody has exactly the same position and facility, though it never happens. They never do it. They always have two positions. They never only have a class. They talk classless. That means they don't want anyone in charge except them, and everybody else is classless. So you can't have here this idea of classless society. But in the Vedic, then you have the different positions, but it doesn't matter. So human life, that's the important thing. And human life elevating itself. And then human life, it's seen in the context of God consciousness, and that is God's world. Therefore, then all other species of life also come under the umbrella of this protection of the Vedic culture. So that means even the animals, they have a peaceful society. It's said that in Satya Yuga and that, or when there's a ruler of a good king, even the animals try to be better behaved. You know, they see the humans. The natural thing is animals look up to humans. But nowadays, humans behave so badly, then they just try to stay out of the way. But previously, they looked up to the humans and humans are behaving nicely, they try to behave nicely. They're animals, you know, how good they'll do it. But you see, like in Vrindavan, all the different animals that are there, they're not bothering each other. So the tigers, the bear, they're not bothering the other living entities. No one's bothering each other. They're all just serving Krishna. So that's the thing, is that the Daiva Varnashram is the only social system that will do that. But because it's doing something that all the other systems simultaneously and elevating the consciousness, it's a much more sophisticated program. And so it takes more training and more understanding. So since we're professional spiritualists, this is what we should be able to do. Right? And then within that, because we're preaching in a wide range through society, then various individuals that come forward and they want to take part in this process, they have their inherent natures, and they just engage themselves accordingly. So you don't technically have to train somebody in management. You preach, and managers will come forward. Managers know how to manage, just like businessman knows how to do business. You don't have to tell them how to do business, right? But a Shudra, he needs a certain quality of skill. And so who has what? Then that's what you do. It's simple things like mopping the floor that anybody can learn. But if someone wants to be, knows how to be an accountant, he can do that. So we don't need to train ourselves in that. You know, sometimes we always say, oh, I'll go out and get an engineering degree or this or that. We don't need to. We preach to engineers. They'll join. They'll do the work. They have so much more experience. Why should we spend? It means you go to the school, you spend 4 years, then you have the internship and this and that. And by the time you know something, it's 10, 15 years, 20 years. And what have you done in Krishna consciousness? Okay, you've done an engineering degree, but that temple you wanted to build, you know, was already built by someone else, 15 years ago. So that's the whole thing. We don't have to. And then within that, so the main training is, how do you connect to Krishna? And if there is something, you can learn from others who know that. If you have a nature in management, then by understanding the principles and associating with other managers, you'll be able to manage. Because you can't teach management in a school and make a manager. Just like you can't teach economics in a school and make a businessman. It's impossible. You run a course on, let's say, economics. If the person has a economic understanding, then by the class, he becomes more aware and more quickly he can get things done. So instead of taking, let's say, 5 years to establish his business, he might do it in 18 months. But if you take someone who does not have any guna and karma in business, he can go to a million of these classes and he'll never become a businessman. It just doesn't happen. You can say, oh, but the MBA they teach, but they don't teach businessmen. They teach the people that the businessman hires. They teach middle management. Right? So in the same way, but the devotional platform, that all souls are qualified for. So when we learn and understand about Krishna consciousness, all living entities can understand that Brahminical platform. And so that way everybody can live that lifestyle. Now, those who are more scholastic and scholarly, they may have a Brahminical varna. And so they can go into that more. And so that might be their occupation. But the point is everyone in the Vedic system, in the Daivavarna ashram, they all understand the Brahminical platform. Therefore, out of 8 positions in Varnashram, 5 are directly Brahminical. And then 3 are specific. You have a specific ability in administration, a specific ability in economics, or a specific ability in certain skills. So then you apply that in Krishna consciousness. It means you use those 3 for your position to maintain yourself, and you use that within the mission to further yours and others' Krishna consciousness. So we see is that the system is natural. It's what is going on in the Vedic position. So why it becomes hard to understand, with Guru Das Prabhu's question, is that it becomes hard to understand for others if they try to approach it from the corporate platform. They'll never understand it, because for them it's just economics. But if you approach it from this Vaishnava educational point of view, then you just see Varnashram. Because for Vaishyas, they don't care about Varnashram any more than it will make them money. If Varnashram will make money, they'll do it. Just like I remember in the 60s, when you had the hippies, and they were getting into the natural lifestyle and organic farming and cooperatives and all that. They had to do it themselves among themselves. I remember going to one hippie-run cooperative that only sold organic food. It was in somebody's house. So it was a big house. So upstairs was where they lived. And downstairs was the shop. And being part of a co-op, then you had to be a member. You had to put in X amount of hours a week doing things in the shop. And then you could buy from there, you know, and they had decent prices. And so that was there. Then I went, joined the movement and everything like that. Then coming back and visiting that place, you know, another 30 years later, then now there are three full supermarkets, you know, big, huge, like a Tesco or something like that, big, that sell only organic food. So in other words, when the Vaishyas didn't see that it's worth making money, you have a few crazy hippies that are talking about it, but once it gets traction, you know, a little bit in the 90s when people started to get a little more health conscious and everything like that, and then into the knots, now it's like it's worthwhile because you can sell organic for more. As long as you can make more profit off it, the effort is worthwhile. So therefore, it's not about morality for these persons. The morality is only in as much as you don't steal their profit. Don't bother their business. That's all the more. But as far as morality on the level of dharma, that by doing these religious activities, then you make profit, you have to be trained in that. So you do have your higher grade vices, like in India. They think like that. They're religious, but it's still fruitive. Right? But on the modern thing, they don't worry about that. They try to cut that out. That's why then the whole point is Varnashram's not important, because it's dharma. They just want to look at artha. What will be the gain? But the point is, artha comes from dharma. You don't have a protected environment, you don't have business, you don't have economics. You know, a stable environment. You find those countries that haven't had a war for a while, they have stable economies. And those countries that are there's war, you don't talk about their economies. Like, what's the economy in Afghanistan now? Right? Well, we're not talking about this flourishing economy.
What about criminals?
Yes. So that's the whole difficulty, is that the whole system, it already has. Brahmins, their main business is studying and teaching. Right? Kshatriya's main business is protecting the people. Vaishya's main business is to make profit without attachment and to give in charity. And Shudra's, then their business is to assist the other three without complaining. Right? You know, if there's a problem, of course, they can say something, but nowadays people just complain because you get profit from it. Right? It means, what is it? You know, you had that whole big Black Lives Matter in America. They made agitation like that. They collected $90 million off of that. And then we saw the lady who was in charge of it bought herself $15 million worth of property. And then after that, you don't hear about Black Lives Matter anymore, because everybody figured out, oh, okay, now we know what's going on. So that's the whole thing. It becomes an agitation just for their own benefit. So that's why Shudras shouldn't do that. They have a valid complaint. Yes, you make your complaint. But you don't just agitate because you can't, because there's so many of you.
That Vice President Gore, some time ago, he became millionaire by this environment thing, global warming.
Yeah, like that. So they just use it for their own profits. So, but the point is, the Vedic system is, no one makes profit where it's not their business. Just like medicine's not run by Vaishyas. Right? You've gone to an Ayurvedic doctor and that, you know, he'll see you himself, like that. He may have assistants that help with the medicine or not. It doesn't cost that much, you know, unless it's some kind of special medicine that is very rare. That it costs more, but otherwise it's not. You know, it just fits into your lifestyle. He'll teach you how you won't get sick again by being careful what you eat, what you do, right? That. So they're trying to educate you, trying to all these different things. And so that's what it is. Everybody can get. But when the vices take over, then unless you're rich, you can't get anything. You know, it just becomes business-minded. So that's, these are weaknesses if you don't have a complete system. Each one is trying to be in control. The intellectuals want to be in control. The government wants to be in control. The business wants to be in control. The common person wants to be in control. So everybody's just trying to get, be in control for their own benefit, and that's it. Well, the Vedic, no, everyone cooperates together so that they, by serving the Lord, that's how they get their benefits. So that's Daiva Varnashram. So you see is that this strategic planning is just that. Know what each position is, then it becomes very clear. That's why I was saying the GBC, the strategic level, the GBC level, is a Brahminical level. They preach. Prabhupada said it's the same as sannyasis. They, you know, if there's a new center to be opened, the GBC arrange and open it. Because many times you see a temple president, as far as he's concerned, in one city there should only be one temple. But like in Delhi, Prabhupada wanted 20 temples. Right? Because otherwise, how do you get the whole city to be able to come to the temple on Janmashtami? So you have to, in each area, have a temple. So depending upon the city and its structure and the volume of people, then you can have different varieties of things going on. So that the GBC establishes. But who runs it, now they're doing the operational. They're the ones that then are managing it, doing the administration. They have their own, you know, the people, the bureaucracies, their tactical, the technical, and all that. So that's what you're talking about there. They're the ones that then are giving the protection. Though, of course, overall, the Brahminical is giving protection by everybody having proper knowledge and knowing how to properly behave. Does that make sense?
Definitely. Lot of sense. Narakati, you had an... thank you. Narakati, yes. You had this... topic of the protection, does it fit to this? But here you were a little dealing with that Nitishastra points there.
Yes, if Maharaj allows, I would just go follow up on your question. And there is one quote from Chanakya Niti, and to Mangalakshita Mataji. Which says, fish, tortoise, and birds bring up their young by means of sight, attention, and touch. So do saintly men afford protection to their associates by the same means. And also Maharaj mentioned in the seminar on the third canto, Kapila's instructions to Devahuti, explaining that the Brahmanas, they protect by austerity, and Kshatriyas, they protect by physical power, and that the both of the power of protection comes from the Lord. So I was thinking in this, sometimes there is a preaching or people think that spiritual masters cannot give protection or, but like this. The protection means only the physical one, that one physically supervises or talks or do something on a practical, physical level. But it seems to be there is this spiritual aspect of protection, specifically, I mean, for example, brahmanas to the society. And the last example is like Prabhupada mentioned also, one devotee, if you just stay in Vrindavan, then things will happen, you know.
Yes.
Not only stay, but you will stay and chant and preach.
Right, but, yes.
If you can, this maybe like subtle or sometimes even mystical aspect of protection of the spiritual persons, if you can explain it more.
Oh, the spiritual, okay. The See, the problem comes is because we have our spiritual nature and our spiritual form, but that becomes covered by this material form, right? And so this material form, then it has material senses. So with this, these material, we can't perceive the soul, nor can we perceive the Lord, right? So that means we don't actually properly perceive his energies either. So it means we're in ignorance. That's the meaning that everyone's under the avidya shakti, even the big sages and Brahmins and all that. If they're not devotees, they're under avidya shakti. They may be in the mode of goodness, end of avidya, but vidya means to know the Lord, right? So therefore, then, since that is real protection, because you're doing something for somebody because the soul is benefited, that's the real protection. But if we identify with the body or only see things with the senses, then we think, unless someone is taking care of my personal environment, you know, then I'm not being protected. But that's why the whole Varnashram system is there, right? Because you can, people will say, oh no, we don't need all this, we're just devotees. Then why are they getting into bureaucracy? Why are they talking about community development? Why is there so much emphasis on, you know, the family units and, you know, the equality with the men and the women? All these are social issues, social economic issues. So how do you take care of those in a balanced way? Only through Varnashram. So therefore, by getting rid of the idea of Varnashram, they've shot themselves in the foot. You have that saying? Yeah, so they simply shot themselves in the foot. And then, because it doesn't work, then you have to come up with more and more speculation on how to make it more and how to make it, you know, like that. And because, you know, so it's like, it just keeps on going and going and going. So in the name of equality, there's more and more differences and segregation. And in the name of freedom, there's less and less that you can say. And less you can do. So it's going in the opposite. That's the mode of ignorance. The mode of ignorance means religion becomes irreligion, and irreligion becomes religion. So what you're not supposed to do, that's what you have to do, and what you're supposed to do, oh, that's nonsense. You know, like it was mentioned yesterday, I think you mentioned it, that these religious groups, and they're dangerous. Why? Because then they give an authority that's above the government. Right? Even if you just want to look scientifically, the modes of nature are above everybody. You can say whatever you like, and then comes along a storm or an earthquake. And then, you know, so they're sitting there in parliament, and, you know, then the chair there says, so, you know, raise your hands, you know, of how many say that, you know, we can't be affected by earthquakes, so this earthquake that is happening now, it can't have any effect on our people and everything like that. You know, raise the hands, it's crushed. The earthquake can't have any effect, right, as the building falls down around them. So that's the thing, is that this is the mode of ignorance. And so then, that's why the prayer, Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalaka, means it's the knowledge. So therefore, the Brahmins, by the teaching, of course you hear, but by them doing their austerities and their sadhana, that creates a pure environment in which others may become inspired. Right? It means if you have someone who is, in other words, if you have someone who's very saintly, you know, it's like Haridas Thakur, right? And then there's that prostitute. She became elevated to the point where she went from being a prostitute to being a Paramahamsa in 3 days. Like that. You know, while on the other end of the scale, you have someone like Rasputin, you don't hear of anybody becoming purified by his association. Right? He's definitely not famous for that. You know? So that's the whole thing, is when that's there, it works. So that's why that austerity, those things, that's what's then appreciated. And when that is done, then it works. And since we're doing it for Krishna, it's not about the austerity. It's about that things are being done for Krishna. So one is living a simple lifestyle for Krishna. Right? And so then that's why then that works very nicely. So that's why then Prabhupada said, just by them being there, because the person themselves was a very strong leader. And sadhaka, and so just by being there, everyone would tend to be more serious about the sadhana and more disciplined, just by sitting there. And especially at that time, you had the two of them sitting there. So one was in the Gurukul, and the other was, you know, was sitting there that they would have, you know, the influence over the administration, because they were the GBC, you know. And so between the two of them, the place was running super smooth and, you know, very nice program and everything like that. But because of the subtlety, then there's always that doubt, well, you know, how much effect, you know, I don't see things happening. So for people who can only function on seeing things happen, then you push them that they're getting a result that can be seen. But as they do that in Krishna's service, they start to become purified, so that besides just seeing that result, they also see the devotional benefit. Right? So that's then the whole point of between the strategic and the operational, that cooperation, is that they can see what will work best to engage individuals according to their nature in Krishna's service, so that you are getting the maximum benefit for the individual and the maximum benefit for the society, so that that benefits others. So when you benefit the society, you benefit others. So the individual should get benefit, and they should be adding benefit for others. Right? And if not, and they're just sitting in their home, at least they're getting benefit. You know, they're just a friend of Krishna or something like that. You know, just considering themselves part of the movement, but not taking so much seriousness of the society. Right? Like that. So they're getting benefit. But then as they come in more and they take the association more seriously and the practice, then they become part of the society. And then there'll be the individuals who are running the projects and all that. Then they will be, you know, directly, you know, part of the institution. You know, it means the legal entity. Because ISKCON means the whole thing. But at the same time, there is the legal entity. That just means the temple and those officers and those devotees. It doesn't mean the community. Right? Unless the community is, you know, involved. Like we say in Chopati, then the community runs the temple. So those ones who are doing that, then they are also officers of ISKCON. Right, so one's a member of ISKCON, meaning that they're part of the society, but it doesn't mean that they're a legal member, just like the church. You have the church and the people involved there. Then if there's something wrong with the church, legal things only happen to them. They don't happen. It's not that a case comes up with that local, you know, local church, and then therefore everybody in the country can be, you know, put in jail. No, you can only go after those persons that are legally there. So this balance has to be understood. This is also not a clear point. So these social things aren't understood. Varnashram's not understood. And so then you have that problem, that you don't know how it all fits together. And if you don't know how it fits together, then it's a problem. So that's why then it starts out. It means, let's say, if you want to do a jigsaw puzzle, right? You know, one of the first things that they tell you is find the four corners. Right? And then get the corners in place. Then you start around the edges to connect those corners and that. Then you fill in the middle. So that's the thing. You get the Brahmins. Like that. You get this knowledge. Then who's doing a mission? Who's doing this and that? Then you can fill it in. Means if you don't have the GBC, you don't have the temple president, you don't have his officers, and you don't have the temple devotees down there, then how do you figure out now how to develop? Right? This guy knows how to cook. This guy is, you know, good at, you know, the book distribution. This guy knows how to do this and that. And so then you put it together, and you have your temple, and you expand. Right? You can't expand, let's say, doing a cultural program like that, if you don't have anybody who can sing and dance and do dramas and those, right? Right. But you could have a nice little just a kirtan and worship the deities and just a simple thing. That's the point, is that it's so, because the principle is the main, it's so easy and simple that anybody anywhere can run a bona fide full program. And then if you have others that you can expand from that, and you have a dance, you have a drama, you have some other things, great. It just gets more, but that's depends on what you have. Then you fill it in. And then you have that person, then you do that. When you don't have that person, either you find another one if you can, or you focus on something else. So that's the meaning of the time, place, and circumstance. Circle means, who do you have? What can you do? What can the others do? And then, of course, time and place. In that field, what's available, then you can do something. Right. So it works, that's the beauty of the Vedic system. It's all perfectly integrated. So like that, we can be talking, we're talking strategic planning, we're taking that as a focus, but actually to make it work, we have to discuss Varnashram, the philosophy, pure devotional service, relationship, you know, proper qualities of devotees, all that to make it work. Does that make sense? But if we're just having a class on the philosophy, you have to discuss all these same things anyway. So that's why you see Prabhupada in his purports, everything that we're going to talk about here is all in his books. So if he's talking about Prithu Maharaj and that, then you're going to hear a lot about administration. You know, you're hearing about, Kardama Muni and that, then you're hearing about the ashram aspect and how he's developing, how he's going from a brahmachari through grihastha and then to renunciation. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so you're always going to hear about that. You know, Maitreya, Vidura and Maitreya, they're talking about the creation, how it all works, how it's all connected to Krishna. So that's the whole thing, is that it's a perfect system because Krishna is perfect and complete and everything that comes from him is perfect and complete. You just have to accept Krishna and how it's all coming from him. Then it becomes perfect and complete. But if we try to avoid that, leave something out, saying, oh, Varnashram is mundane and bureaucracy is spiritual? You know, when did that happen? Daiva Varnashram, led by the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, and we're going to add bureaucracy, which basically means Shudras controlled by Vaishyas, and somehow or another that can be engaged in Krishna service? You know, it's just like when the Acharyas talk about Yukta Vairagya, that means engaging your body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. So whatever your nature is, that's what you engage. In other words, according to your position in Varnashram, you engage in Krishna service. Yeah, savai pumso paro dharmo. But it's taken, oh no, this Vedic, this is all mundane. So what's Daiva Varnashram? Using anything that's not Vedic in Krishna service. Means we have our phone. You see, I have this phone. That's Yukta Vairagya. You know, as soon as you say, oh, why aren't you doing that? So you're not using planes? You're not using phones? You don't use the internet? Do you ever hear any other point made? No, I haven't heard any other point in the last, 40 years. But that's the only thing that they ever say. But it's about your body. It starts there. It means how do you use a phone if you don't use your hand and your eyes and your brain? So therefore, the whole thing is that it means engaging yourself, whatever is that conditioning, in Krishna's service. That is Yukta Vairagya. So that's the whole thing, is that, And if they do use the Vedic, then they take all these aparavidyas, or these mundane Vedic knowledge, and because it's Vedic, it's automatically spiritual, like astronomy or Ayurveda, or these things. No, it's not. Bhagavatam, that's spiritual. Everything else is in support of that. All the other branches of Vedic knowledge, if they're in line with Bhagavatam, then it's useful in Daiva Varnashram. If they're not, we don't care. That's how we can go on and preach, even though no cultural aspects are necessarily applied. But people say, oh, we're uncultured in that. That's because the more you're Krishna conscious, then you can properly use the culture. But if you think you're going to be cultured without Krishna, I don't think so. You're not going to be any more cultured than you were before you joined. You know, that seed, it's not going to be any more. I mean, were you going to operas and listening to Beethoven and all that before you joined? If not, you're not going to get more cultural now. You know? Did you appreciate going out and, you know, from whatever it is you ate, but going to a restaurant that served Polish food or Mexican food or, you know, German food or this or that? If you did, then you can appreciate a cross. If you didn't, you're not going to like Indian food now. And so you see that. They're talking culture and refinement, but they're only talking the same thing that they talked 50 years ago. Be nice, be good. We have to remember communes. You know commune? Where everyone lives. How did that work out in Israel? They set it up with communes. They're not running now. They all have to, if they can't make money, so they're all doing business in that. Otherwise, they can't function. So they have to make it more. They have another name for it when everyone kind of does their own thing, but there's a tight community, so it's more of a co-op. Like that, they've gone into that. But everybody does their own thing. So these more kind of socialistic tendencies, they're there in the Vedic system. But if you think that it means you don't manage the place by socialism, socialism is the benefiting the common person. But you make your money through business. Right, you and you manage through administration, not through socialism. Right, and the philosophy and all that, the intellectual has to be applied. And without administration, how do you apply it? There's not a safe environment. How do you apply it? So you have to combine all these together, and that's the Vedic system. So if one has been focusing on, it means not focusing, but appreciative of this over the last 40 years, then people would know how to use it. But if you've been opposing it for 40 years because we're not this body, Prabhu, we're the soul, then what? You can't teach, you know, how you say, you can't teach old swans new tricks. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. So that means that just directly on the thing, just one point is that, in other words, you're always thinking about it, that will prosper the thing because you're thinking about it, therefore then those environments you're going to see. It's just like you've done cooking? Much? Okay. So now, if someone's actually good at cooking, why are they consistently good at cooking? Why? Because they're always meditating on what they're cooking. Let's say they're doing something, they put something in the pot. They walk away from the pot to you know, get something out of the fridge or cut something. They're meditating on the cooking. They can tell when it needs to be stirred. They're in the other room. They can tell, time to go back and stir. And so they never burn anything. The guy that burns stuff is the guy that walks off and doesn't come back. Right? And then when they come back, they're so surprised. There's no meditation. Right? And then by touch, then, you know, by sight, you're always seeing, like the kids are playing in that. You're always seeing what they're doing. You're seeing, are they getting too near the stairs or left this? And if they go cove that, they can fall over. So by seeing, you're seeing what's going on. And then by touch, you're there, you know, you're reassuring and all those kind of things like that. Like I think there was something done, some study done on monkeys. I'm not sure which monkey, but I think it was chimpanzees. If you don't touch the babies, they don't actually grow. They don't physically grow unless they're being touched. They just stay small because, you know. But because someone's touching it like that. So the whole point is through these three things, you're meditating on, let's say you're preaching. How preaching will go on. You know, then like that, and then you're seeing what are the opportunities, how it's going like that, and you're actually involved with those things that are there and who is preaching, and that's how everything goes. So being a temple president, being a GBC, being tech, you have to use all these three. And the better you can use it. So the higher up you go, the more then the meditation and the touch works. I mean, the meditation and the sight works, because just by seeing, they can see. On the bottom, then they physically have to take their skill and use it, and only when they use it, then you get something. But you see as you go up, then more sight, then that, but then the meditation is the top. So then you like that. Like, you know, the turtle sits in the ocean, meditating on the eggs. They hatch, and what happens when they hatch? Those little baby turtles run to the sea. You know, they go and find where their parents are, because of meditation. So that's why then all this has to be there. So this whole thing of, like what you said in the beginning, that the guru is going to protect us, or the temple is by touch, then it's part, but it has its limitation. And so that's the thing. They expect you to do everything for them and all that, but, you know, no. That's why in Varnashram, you have all these things. That's why there's marriage, there's community, right? The family takes care, then the group of families, they take care. Someone has a problem, someone gets sick, they can't take care of the family. The other families step in and help and all that until the person's got their health back. That's what it's all for. So all these social things are there for the purpose of just things run smoothly so you can be Krishna conscious. So one has to understand the whole thing and how it has to go back to Krishna consciousness. Then all these things, like, you know, this thing, is it, you know, community or temple? Community or temple? You know, we can't have both. What do you mean? What are they talking about? The temple is the center of the community. You know, it's like in India, you have Udupi, and it's the center of the town. I don't know if they still do it, but they used to do it when we used to go there. The deity eats at noon. And when he's finished eating, or a little bit before that, they light a cannon. It makes a big boom. Then everybody knows, okay, then the Udupi Krishna's eaten, now they'll eat their lunch. Otherwise, in that area, no one eats lunch before the deity's eaten. You know, so I mean, the temple is like, I remember I was in a shop in Jaipur. I'm not sure when, 90s or 80s or something, sitting in a shop looking at some stuff like that. And suddenly the guy said, you know, you'll have to excuse us. We're going for darshan. It's 7 o'clock. And they got up and left the shop. We're there ready. Yeah, they couldn't. You stay nice. If you don't, some, because they have a smaller shop, they go out, lock the door, go for darshan, go for the artik. Artik's over. They come back, open the shop, and stay there until, you know, 10 o'clock. But Mangal Artik, Dart, and Evening Artik, that everybody goes. So that's the whole thing, is the community thing. It's around the deity. So how can you not have both? So this idea is one or the other. You might start with one, and then just like Chopad, you started with community. It actually started with three people, you know, Maharaj and one couple. And then from there is more, and then you add community, and then they made the temple. And now they have one of the best temples, you know, I mean, as far as made in a movement. But at the same time, there's only like 120 people living in the temple, and the other, you know, how you say, 15,000 people, they live in their homes and stuff like that. So the one has to see is it all goes together, but it's such a perfect system. It can have any blend and balance in that depending on what's there. It's so perfectly individual. But as soon as it said, oh no, but if you had this, it wouldn't work, because you would adjust it for that. But then it says, oh, we can adjust. We'll adjust everything. You know, why God? You know, why Krishna has to be God? Why not my baby? You know, never seen Hindus? Oh, baby is God. You know, it's like, hey, come on, you know. You know, we've had enough Hindus around here, you know. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Maharaj, those principles what you mentioned, they were just, like, I was born in the area which could be considered to be like a village, although it was part of the city.
Yes.
When we had what we would call the spiritual thing, we turned to the headmaster of the school, or the priest, or our teacher of religion was just living in the neighbor. But when it was about some other things, there was always the experts in like that. But I mean, like I'm seeing, I'm sorry to sound maybe a little, but like seeing like the thing, for example, moving the storage, you know, that's the normal truck driver, and it's on the other end one truck which moves them to the place. But if it's about ISKCON, this is just a real example. It's an preacher brahmachari who broke in 3 weeks period his back and can't distribute anymore very well, and not the others involved, because otherwise it costs something. So I mean, this is just an example from this summer of maybe the previous. But I'm just saying that where on earth, or why on earth, it goes always this kind of a short-term economy in the first. It's like, you know, that, oh, we save now something, and then we lose. We lose a lot. I'm not sure how to, but it's a bit irritates, because it doesn't get any better. It's just years are changing. Like Sotomayor said, nothing is changed except the names.
Right. That's what I mean. Basically, you're going to have, these are problems always there in the material world. Means these are eternal problems. Then at any one particular time and place, a particular problem will become more obvious. So you could say is the present culture is based more around, centered around the economic community. You know, the bourgeois is the main thing. So if you go back in time, you know, Sotomayor used to talk about this, that you go back in time, it was the priests that were the main. And then at some point, the kings became the main. And then when you had all these revolutions against the kings, then the bourgeois becomes the main. And then you had communism, which is about the common person becoming the main. So you're always going to have these, depending on what it is. So you're going to see is that, it means that it's an economic problem that, in one sense, it's lower than the standard, because it's below the proper strategy and operational. It's just a tactical thing. But in one sense, when it's economic, at least it's a slight step better than it's just about political correctness and this and that and all this and, oh no, you have to see this. So therefore, you'll see that they're willing to lose tons of money for the idea that, no, it's all equal, or it's this or that and some philosophy. So that's your lowest, because it's working on the Shudra platform and it's not even efficient. Right? So that's the problem. When Brahmins are only supposedly worrying about the common person, but they're only worried about a particular group of common persons, and they're willing to sacrifice everything else for that, and it's not efficient, so no one gets any benefit. Except, of course, we mentioned that lady who was able to buy 4 properties for $15 million. She did all right. But other than that one person, then not a whole lot get benefit. So it's because of this push of the bourgeois, even the dress, right? The suit, coat, tie, that's a business dress. Like you see previously before, is that the nobility and that, they had their own dress. So when heads of state would meet, they would wear that dress. But then it came to be a point kind of after, you kind of dissolve so many of the nobilities and all these things, then when they would meet, sometimes they would wear that, but they got the tendency where they would wear the business outfit. You know? So there would be discussion, are we wearing our royal outfit, or we're wearing, for them, the business suit and tie, that was more casual. Right? And so, you know, because people would appreciate that better, wouldn't criticize so much. So you see, so we see as the business community has become, in one sense, a more, in your formal, more traditional things, it becomes more prominent. But then you have nowadays where even that, they go to work, no one properly wears any proper clothes, they go in their t-shirts, they don't shave, they don't this and that, and all that, trying to be more liberal and all that. But whether they make money, whether they can maintain, whether they get any loyalties. Like I was told, is that before, as people would work at a company and be loyal to a company, and so the company could grow. But nowadays, with the millennials, is the millennial only looks where he can make the most money. So he'll work for your company. If he finds another company that's willing to give, he'll gone. No loyalties at all. So it's really hard to keep these business. They come up quick and then they go down. They don't maintain. And so the ones that do maintain, you generally see they're wearing suits. So that is economic means it is one of the considerations. When you're considering these things, you're going to see is, okay, what is, you know, about the physical health and all these different things like that. You're going to see the economics. You're going to see, you know, what's the religious duties. And you're going to see what's the philosophy and what's the spiritual, you know, position. But the thing is you can't lose the higher for the lower. You can lose the lower for the higher. You know, like you were saying there, you have that community, so you might lose some money for, you know, bringing in a guy to move your stuff. But at the same time is, you'll see in the community with time, if it's something regular they do, one member of the community, he'll make moving stuff his job. And then the money stays in the community. But here is, you can't have that, okay, if he guy moves it in 3 weeks, and then after that he can't do anything else for, you know, some time, then if you say is, okay, he couldn't do a service for, that means he's not doing for 2-3 weeks of moving, and then he can't do for another 3 weeks, so that's 6 weeks. So then the point is he didn't do a service for 6 weeks. So he did a service, you know, he's going to get devotional benefit, but then the question comes is, is that worth it? Would it have been more worthwhile to bring in a guy? Or would it have been, okay, instead of him moving it in 3 weeks, could he have moved it in 6 weeks and still done his service? Or why have one guy do it? Why not have everybody get involved? Or everybody get involved and move it in 3 days, and then everybody gets back to their service. So you have to always see is that, you know, that overall principle. So money must be considered, but it can't be the only thing you can consider, because otherwise sometimes, you know, how you say, as we mentioned before, that, what was his name? The Bata, I think he was, you know, from Czech, that area, the shoe guy, the big shoe company. No one knows. You have in India, Bata shoes.
He was from Czech and he had Bata companies in South America and all over the world.
Yeah, so he was big. But the interesting thing, he was a bit more like a Kshatriya, because he was a bit like Hershey's in America, is that they created a whole community and everything for their workers, schools and hospitals and everything, so that their workers could be completely taken care of.
Yeah, he built houses for his workers.
Yeah, he built houses. Nestle would have a whole community, schools, everything for them, so that they didn't have to worry. And they were good. It wasn't that he was trying to, you know, cheat. People liked to work there, so they committed lifelong there. And so he made a statement, I'm too poor to buy cheap things. I don't have enough money to buy cheap things. Right? Because if I buy a cheap thing, it breaks. And then I have to buy another cheap thing and it breaks. And another cheap thing and it breaks. Well, if I buy something better, it'll last longer. Like, I remember I used to get this one watch. It was a cheap watch. Every 6 months, I had to change it. Every 6 months. And you have to go out of your way, find a thing, go this and that, get there, spend the money. So over that time, I could have bought a little bit better watch and not worried about it for, you know, the next 10, 20 years. You know? So that's the thing, is that there's the thing is you have the point of, there's a point where the balance between what money you put in and your return, you know, value for money. So you have to see that. You know, you're not looking at the prestige of it. You know, you're not looking at that kind of thing. You're looking at, you know, where's the value for money. And then that balance, then you should be able to see. So economics is important, because Prabhupada used to stress that here in Mayapur with the managers. He says, 1 cent today, tomorrow 1 cent, the next day 1 cent. You know, and you just add that up, and pretty soon $1 million lost. Because every day you're losing something like that because you're not managing it properly. So Prabhupada expected that the managers would be very careful about money. But at the same time, is if you lose your Sankirtan guy, who's the guy who's making the money, what was the benefit? You know, if you're simply looking economics, Sankirtan makes the money. So if you lose your Sankirtan, how do you make money? So therefore, is it worth it? So like that, you have to balance. You know, and if it's so important, they would get everybody moving it. You know, it has to be moved now. If not, move it over 3 months. You know, do some yourself on the weekends, you know. Like that, little by little, if it's no big deal. So you just have to balance it. You just have to see what works. Is that okay?
Thank you, Royal
Maharaj. Okay, so.
Royal Mora.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, my humble
Hare Krishna. Jai Nitai.
Thank you for these leadership courses, Maharaj. I've been finding them incredibly helpful. And I also wanted to thank you for the Mahabharata readings, which I've been following on YouTube.
Okay.
They're fantastic. The cultural
element, thank you.
Very enlightening. Thank you so much for that.
Okay, thank you.
Basically, my questions are in relation to the fact that by Krishna's grace, I'm being asked to be the temple president in ISKCON London from August the 1st. And I've tried to, according to my understanding of your teachings, establish a management structure according to the four principles, strategic, operational, tactical, technical.
Yes.
It looks quite good. But my questions are in relation to education. The educational system up until this point in ISKCON London has been very much in the corporate style. So I'd like to ask you some advice on how we could better establish a system of education here. And then in addition, any other obvious points that we could improve on based upon your experiences when you come here in the past. And so that when I come into that leadership position, I can influence some positive change for your pleasure, for the pleasure of the other Vaishnavas and the wider community.
Means that people should know how what they're doing is connected to Krishna and what is the spiritual benefit they're getting from doing this, you know, by serving Krishna. Because otherwise, like you said, if you just use the corporate model, they only get into knowledge and skills, right? And this is the funny thing. This is a really funny point. We're using the corporate model for education, but what does the corporate model teach? Does it teach you how to make money? No, because the guys running the corporations are making the money. They are trying to teach people that they can engage to make them money. So therefore, the corporate model for education means only training shudras. And you should say, no, but they have all these business models and all the middle management. The middle management is all shudras. Their background, they might be from a Brahmin background or a business background, but their service that they're doing is shudras. So, corporate model only knows how to train shudras. So you don't even know what is your dharma, what is your nature, what you should be doing, whether it's right or wrong, what is a good thing to do and not a good thing to do, what's the social position and all that. You know, stuff like this, because it's just like this. Okay, does corporate have a problem with you working on Christmas or New Year's or during your child's birthday party or when they're doing their recital at school or they're playing their final match in their baseball game? Does corporate have a problem with you missing that? Not at all. And they'll say, oh, you want to be for that? I thought you were more professional. Oh, man, we should have gotten someone else for the job. We thought you were a professional guy. Now we find out, you know, you're just one of these sentimental guys, you know, attached to family, not really willing to commit to his when you have an occupation?
Career.
Career, yeah. We thought you were more of a... And so all they're saying is that, oh, we were thought you were more committed to making us money. We didn't realize you were, had these, archaic sentiments of being a human being that, is a social animal and has to, like that. And they use that all the time. Like that. But where is that businessman during Christmas? He's at home. He's not an idiot. He's hired you to be the idiot. So therefore, that's your first problem, is taking the lead from corporate education means training shudras that have no moral standards, no religious standards, and no understanding of the philosophy. So where in their model do these fit? And you can say, oh, but they don't fit in so nicely, so we're just being practical, we're leaving them out. Because it's not meant to have them in it. While the educational model has it all. Prabhupada doesn't talk about family. Prabhupada doesn't talk about economics. He doesn't talk about administration or training or preaching. It's all there in the books because that's the Brahminical standard. So it teaches everything. It may not say, oh, but it's not as efficient. How efficient? That means, where in the world do you teach a guy that knows nothing a course over a 5-day or 10-day seminar, and then you say, okay, now he can do it? We have a 10-day seminar to become a teacher, or a 10-day seminar, a 5-day seminar, how to become a disciple. And now you can do it? You know what I'm saying? And they're using the corporate model? The corporate model is like this. Yes, they do have 10-day, 5-day seminars. But based on what? The guy's already done an MBA, which is a master's of 18 months, and he's already done, a 3 or 4 year course in economics. So he already has 4.5 years of training under his belt before going to that 5-day seminar. So that's the whole thing, is we're supposed to train in all these things, and you're supposed to show the connection. If you can't show the connection, why are you teaching? You say, oh no, but we're being practical. No, you're not. Because you're neither getting profit, nor is anybody going back to Godhead, and it's not even being run nicely. So where's the profit that you're talking about? Profit you should see. That's the thing about profit. It's right there. You see the benefit. So that's real. That's practical. When people are more Krishna conscious, that's more practical. And as far as personal experience on what you can do there, it's a small building. Don't keep anything more there than you need. Keep it clean. It's too small to let any extra, all that stuff on the stairs and there, when you come in, the shoes, there's extra junk. Are all those, so many shoes are there. Anybody's using them? If not, get rid of them. Give them to whatever it is, you have the Salvation Army, whoever it is that you give clothes to, Go into all those rooms, like that one special place that you go up the stairs from next to the deities, and then there's that little room where you go and you meet people. It's got so much junk in it. Like that, you go next door to that, our fancy, when you have a whole bunch of people having a meeting, a conference, like that junk. Like that, Even that, next to Prabhupada, there's that little closet, open the door, junk. So that's my only advice. I mean, I give that advice to any temple, especially Soho, because, if you move your elbows a little this way, you're going to bump into something, So just get rid of the junk. You don't need it. And then you'll find it's clean, and then the atmosphere is nice. That was the point before, Narakrita made about austerity. So Brahmins, it's austerity. It means how much is actually required, you keep it. Don't think, oh, maybe we could keep it, but maybe it'll be useful. But if it's not, get rid of it. And so then a clean temple, then it's nice, people, their brains will work better, like that. you know, and everything will go. The brahmacharya ashram, you know, the bathroom. Make sure the bathroom still works. You know, I mean, those things were put in there, you know, 20 years ago. Do the taps still work? You know, do they still this and that? If they do, great. You know, then that just shows the perfection of buying that kind of solid stainless steel, you know, stuff. And we know where that's from, where it's used by the government, you know, but that's why they use it. It can't be broken. So, but if it's not, great. But if it is, fix it. Make everything work. It all works nice. It's simple. You have no extra stuff there. It's good. You know, no mess, no muss, no fuss. You know, it's just like behind you. On the very top of that cabinet, there's this red looks like some file. Do you ever use that? Otherwise, why is it there? Why can't the files, the other files, be standing up? You know, it means, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing. You know, make sure your plant gets enough water. Right? And the white behind you is nice. It looks good. It looks clean. So it should be people walk into the place. It's simple, but it's clean, and they like it. Our temple ended up in St. Louis. Furniture. You walked in, there was a cabinet there, one of those glass cabinets that had, you know, books and beads and stuff like that in it. Then nothing else, the whole hallway or nothing. Go into the temple room, then there was a Vyasa-san for Prabhupada. There was a little cabinet that the books and all the other things were in. That was it. Then you had the deity room, had an altar. The temple president's office had a desk and a filing cabinet. Brahmacharya ashram had nothing. In the closet, some order how everybody had. And that was it. And when people came into and the funny thing about it is when you keep it that clean, if you burn incense, you actually smell the incense. Otherwise, it just goes in and disappears into everything else. And that, so people would come to the temple and remark how clean the place was. They didn't go, well, there's nothing here, this is weird. They just go, wow, so clean. Because if you look at really high places, they're clean. Very minimal stuff. Only what's necessary. And so because the place is so small, you want to consider that. Right? You know, the manor has a little bit more space. I can stuff things under the stairs there. You know, I mean, under the stairs is like as big as half of your temple room, you know, so, yeah. But yeah, training means training people about everything. It starts with Krishna, how it pleases Krishna, how it pleases Guru, how all this thing is all connected together. Who are you? How you're relating? How you're involved? Why you're doing what you're doing? You know? Means we study all these things because then it develops faith. Right? In other words, if somebody like, you know, how you say, Prahlad Maharaj, he didn't have to go to formal study to know what he knows. He spontaneously had love for Krishna. Right? He comes in contact with a spiritual master and he has that natural love. But, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, if you don't have that, automatically that position of faith. You only have that soft faith. It means it's real faith, but it's soft, it's pliable. Then you have to, from the spiritual master, hear and study the scriptures. And you have to see scripture as the only authority. And you have to see everything that you're doing, its only value is how much it's useful in Krishna's service. Otherwise, it doesn't have a value. Right? It's Krishna's world. Its value is because it's Krishna's world, not that it has a value outside of Krishna. That's why we study. That's why we have classes. You see, Prabhupada didn't have formal classes until 1970. Before that, then the books were there. Devotees would read. They'd go out on Harinam all day. They'd get up in the morning, they'd chant, they'd read, they'd have breakfast, go out all day, come back in the evening, have some milk and that, do some reading, go to bed. But when he saw that no one was advancing nicely, was they weren't understanding the philosophy, maybe individuals, but in the group, they weren't. Then he introduced the formal morning program, evening program, two classes a day, everything like that, just to make sure it all happened. So that's what it's for. That's why we do it. So this whole thing is, we put no emphasis on this. And then what is the position? Okay, if you're supposed to be second initiated, what are you supposed to know? Right? You're supposed to have a Bhakti Shastri level understanding, right? And then to be a sannyasi and all that, then you have to be a Bhakti Vaibhav. Now, if you want to be a guru, GBC, you have to be Bhaktivedanta level. Is there much push on that? Have you ever seen anybody's got those degrees? You know, one or two places, they put a little emphasis on it just so it makes it easy for them. The guy comes and says, you know, can I get initiated? And they go, well, you have to do the course, you know. So if you did the course, then you say, okay, well, it fits the criteria they can get. But before, you just knew the person and just knew he's qualified or they're not. So the point is this, the education has to be used not like a corporate model, but as an educational model to bring people up in Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? And so if people are becoming more Krishna conscious, understanding how, like here, we were discussing about how the strategy applies in how the Varnashram works. So one, you understand where you fit, how you fit, and at the same time you see how that fits up to Krishna. Because as we said, performance of your duties, if you're not doing it to please the Lord, what's the point? If you're doing it with attachment, it's going to give you problems. But you're doing it to please the Lord, that's going to make it work nicely. Does that make sense? So you always have to see. And you have formal classes, but previously, every moment was educational. You're there, you're watching someone, you're walking behind someone, how they're walking up the stairs. You know, they're clumping, or they're doing things, or they're dragging their feet, and you can mention, you know, no, walk like this, or how are people keeping their shoes? Just by going out of the door, watching how people keep their shoes right there, that's a class. You know? Does that make sense? How the brahmacharis keep their stuff. What does the bathroom look like? You know? What's the quality of serving prasad? How do they take care of guests? How do they take care of visiting devotees? What's the respect amongst themselves? I mean, we used to someone with second initiation was probably given as much respect as a general sannyasi today. Previously, I would have said a temple president, but even that not. And not some. Some sannyasi more, but like that. What respect was given to the president, that would have been given to, you know, your more senior sannyasis and even some of your more general gurus. And what was respect was given to the sannyasis easily was given to the gurus who were, you know, like, you know, back in the 80s during the Raj, you know, like that. So the respect has just dropped so much that there is no respect. And neither does anybody, you know, work to command that respect. You know, because as the point before, it's the austerity that makes that go up. Austerity, that's the wealth of the Brahmins. So that knowledge, all these things, that's there, that culture. So you can see the devotees are respectful. Right? You know, because that's the thing. It means our etiquette is the third verse of Shikshastika. You know, all the people talk about this, that. No, if you don't have that, you don't have the other things. You can't be equal if you don't respect people. You can't be equal if you're looking for respect for yourself. Right? You can't be equal if you're not humble, if you're not tolerant. So if those four are there, and that's coming because you're always trying to be absorbed in chanting and value chanting, that itself create all the other qualities will come from there. The 26 qualities, the 50 qualities that are there in the soul, you'll see them all if those four are there. And the key of that is the chanting. So Prabhupada mentions humility. How do you gain humility? You gain it by having faith that nothing else in this material world other than the holy name and the association of Vaishnavas will give you any benefit. And if you think something else is giving you benefit, to that degree, they're not. You'll see their humility is not there. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's that simple. You can say, oh no, but it's complicated. No, it's not. It's really simple. It's a matter of faith. You're humble because of faith. And because of that, therefore, you can be tolerant. When you can be tolerant, therefore, you can respect everyone else and not look for that respect for yourself. Then you can always be chanting because you see that's the most valuable. So that's education. You know? That's what it mentions in the... what is it? I think it's maybe it's 8th chapter of the Gita. Then it gives that whole list of 20 items of knowledge. Right? And it says of all those, humility is the main one. So how do you tell someone has knowledge? Humility. If they're not humble, they don't really have knowledge. They may be a scholar. And they may be very scholastic, but they're not. They don't actually have real knowledge. Because when push comes to shove, they can't use that knowledge. They just become angry and it's about their position and all these different things. So. Yes, good. Good luck.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
I'd like to mention that about the educational point, just as a comment that one of our old friends from Turku times, Lansden, he built up just in the nearby country just two big institutes for ladies who will have also the proper character to be kind of a standards of the society. Putin was building two boarding schools, one just last year at St. Petersburg and one about, I think, 9 years ago in Moscow. And one of the main things is the proper character whom they associate. It's all maintained by the state, and it seems to be that he's just getting the point, of course, from the Vaishnava tradition, but in order to save the country, it can't be saved with the degraded, you know, woman as well, educated in the West as it. So he's limiting them. They can only associate with the cadet officers who are under training and like that. But seems to be that they figure they invested millions for that. It's on the best places. His good friend Rothenberg was offering the best places in St. Petersburg like that. But it seems to be, even on the mundane sense, without a proper, regular, you know, systematic education, it fits to the character as well, the results will be quite opposite for the disciple.
Yes, yes. Definitely. Like you see, his Prabhupada in the Krishna book, he's talking about Devaki. There's some exchange with Kamsa and her husband. And she gives this whole explanation. And Prabhupada in the purport mentions that she's a Kshatriya. So she's trained, she knows all the stuff that the Kshatriya, you know, all does. But as a woman, she does her part of it. And her husband does another part. Because if everybody does the same thing, how does it work? Right? If two people are trying to stir the pot at once, it's not going to work very nicely. You know? So they would know, but they would use that in the context of their position. So that would be the thing, is everybody would know who they are, what's the position, what's all these things. But it's not restrictive, because then you can move whichever you want. But at the same time, is you do have to know that there is inherent nature. You know, you can't use a rock,
potatoes?
Yeah, good one. like that. It just has a nature. Because everything I was thinking, you can't use it for music, and someone will say, no, no, but we play on it, and it's a car. I said, you can't use it for art. No, no, we use it and draw on the wall with it. Okay. Yeah, so I was, you know, I wasn't, but the potato, that's the perfect one. Always the potato is the perfect example, right? Works for everybody, everywhere, in all times, places, and circumstances. And even works on a codicy, right? So, you know, hey, perfect. So, yes. So that's the thing, is the Vedic system is actually allowing someone to add, because you can say whatever you like, but then the problem comes is with time, then you start to see what works, is what the Vedas are recommending. It's just sad when you only figure that out when you're 50, 60, 80 years old. Like that, like I remember, I think it was, yeah, one lady, you know, doing this and that, so many different things, and then she just figured out, you know, it was much easier to be, you know, married and just perform those duties of that, and you know, they were more of the vanaprastha, so then they could just focus on their sadhana and on their preaching and stuff like that, but, you know, she would do the lady stuff, he would do the men stuff, and like that, it worked very nicely. She'd been through, that was her third marriage, and he works it out, and the guy also. Right? Two marriages bomb, and by the third one he figures out, you know, maybe he, you know, is a little nice to his wife. He talks nicely, and she's happy, and she's also figured out as, well, she should be the same, and it works. And so this stuff is being trained. They could have done that from teenagers and then already had, you know, a marriage that was lasting for all that time. You know, because they're book devotees, they have common values, so it could work, but that's the thing, is that you try to do all these things, or, you know, remember one devotee, somehow or another, he had studied under a guy, practically, like internship, who was considered the best in the country with dairy farming. And he knew dairy farming like anything, and then also along with that farming. The guy was so good at it, but then he figured with time, nobody cared about farming and cows, really. You know, presidents, and it was all about who's controlling this, that. So then he decided he'll get into management. So it's a bit like the Vishwamitra kind of thing. You know, he's doing this, and then he gets defeated and says, that's better, and keeps going, you know. And then that bombed on him really bad. And then I met him, maybe it was like, I don't know, maybe 20 years after I had, you know, last seen him when he bombed as a manager, you know, like a temple kind of thing. And then he was teaching in the school. So all along his nature was just that simple Brahminical. He was a teacher, and he's a good teacher. He'd been doing it for 20 years, so it wasn't like all the other things that bombed out on. So it was, he was able to intellectually understand how it works so nicely because of that Brahminical brain. But he didn't have the managerial ability to make it work. So he couldn't get the farming to work and cow. He couldn't get the management to work. But as soon as he just accepted and did his Brahminical thing, it was nice. The students liked him. He was a good teacher. He did really well. Everything like that. So it's just a matter of whatever is your nature, do that for Krishna, and then it works perfectly. Otherwise, yes, you can try to do anything else you want in the name of, you know, equal opportunity and equality. And that. And then, you know, after 20, 30, 50 years, you'll figure out, well, maybe it's easier to just do what your nature is. And so then it works so nicely. And that's the perfection of the Vedic system, is all of them have their origin in the Brahminical. So that means anybody, whatever their nature, they can be a Vaishnav and be absorbed in devotional service, and be expert and professional in that. And then accordingly, whatever other natures they have, they use that to get those things done and add in, and that makes the uniqueness to that individual and their particular service and preaching. Then it works perfectly. You know, so that's the thing, because that's just accepted that Krishna made the nature, not us. Then it just makes it so much easier. You figure out what you do, and then you know from that where your strengths are and your weaknesses are, where you can organize, where you can't, where you can do, where you go. And then others also know. Because they know, okay, let's say this guy knows business. So if we're talking about something to do with money and like that, ask him. You know, why will I ask that austere brahmacharya over there in the corner? He doesn't know. Like that, I'll ask the guy who knows money, and he'll tell you. And then, so that way, then the administrator and the preachers, they get so much done because they engage who can do this stuff. Like, we were discussing, I think, day before yesterday. Radhanath Maharaj, he just knows, like it was said, he knows how to inspire people in Krishna consciousness. And what will they do? They will do their nature. So if they're managers, they know money, they'll get the money together. He has big projects. He doesn't have to raise any money. He inspires those people that know money. They know how to get it. Like I saw, Ambarish Prabhu, right? He's coming from that background of money. He knows if you want to raise money, you put in money. Because I remember is when we, I think one of our managers asked him, you know, if he'd like to donate for something in the school. You know, we have a project. His first question is, who else is giving? He wanted to know who's giving. What quality of people are giving? So then he can understand. He didn't have to, by doing that, he can tell whether the project is good or not. Because he knows nothing about it. He's interested. But if he hears people who are qualified are investing, then he knows it's worth investing. Because a guy that has, you know, knows what he's doing won't invest in something that's bad. And at the same time, as you could say, okay, he's asking that. When it came for a collection for the big temple, the first thing he did is says, I'm pledging this much money. Right when he starts the talk, he's got everybody there that could either put in money or knew how to influence people to get money. And his first thing is, I'm putting in this much money. You know, you match it. And if you get more, I'll match that. That was his first thing. So he knows money, he knows how to make it work. So that's the thing is, you ask those people, they know how to do that. Managers know how to manage. You know, the cook knows how to cook. Right? You know, the treasurer knows how much money you have, so whether you can do any of that or not. You know, so you have to ask these people. And that makes a good manager. That's why when yesterday, the point of micromanagement, it's the most useless thing on the planet. Because unless you know everything, so the only person that technically could micromanage in this universe is Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, and Lord Shiva, and of course Durga. But do they? No. But they're the only ones called. They know everything, literally. But they don't micromanage. So if the guys that are qualified that they could don't, why would anybody else think it's a value? So that's why the president has his people and he listens to them. And that point is why he's the president, because he follows up. He goes after. He sees this happening. He puts it into place. He brings the people in. That's what he's doing. He may not have to do anything else, but he does it. You know, and that's the fuck that. And then as an individual, he's advancing in Krishna consciousness. He's applying himself in Krishna consciousness. He's chanting. He's doing these things. He's inspiring the others. And so therefore then, from his individual and from his manager, he makes it all happen. And then it's great. And then all these other guys, they feel good because they did something. But as soon as you try to micromanage, then he's not doing. And then he does have the ability, he'll step back. So that's the thing is, you know people's nature. It's nature and ability. So let's say the guy has business. Okay, but how big a business? Okay, he runs a little shop on the corner, right? You know, and he pleases everyone. He sells ice cream, right? So he'll know principles of business that you could learn from him. But on doing something on something really big, he won't know. But he has the nature, if need be, then he might be able to find out. He may not be able to do it. As a devotee, he could find out because of that brahminical side. He still may not be able to do it. And if he does, that's by Krishna's grace. But otherwise, he asks somebody who's bigger. You know, it's like Radhanath Maharaj is talking to some of the richest in India. And that says something. You know, someone's, okay, we're the richest in Papua New Guinea. You know, there's only 20 people there that got money. You know? But you're talking about 1.4 billion people. Right? And there's huge business communities. So to be 10th richest in India, or to be, you know, above that in India, then they're good. They say, you know, it works. So he would deal with that and managers. So he's like Daipataka Maharaj, like you said, he's not a manager. He was inspiring people down in Bangalore, where you had 50 guys that knew how to manage. And they built that temple, a big, huge project in record time. They were spending 5 lakhs a day in that time. That would have been when? Back in the 80s, I think. So that's a lot of money. 5 lakhs a day. They had how many engineers? I think they had something like 10 or 20 engineers on site and everybody. I mean, it's huge. And he inspired them to do that. He'd regularly go there, talk with them and that, but he didn't manage it. They managed it. You know, same Gopal Krishna Maharaj. He inspires the other guys to do it. They make the money. They build the buildings. They do the stuff. So that's the whole thing is the president, he inspires others to do it. Where they can't, then he tells them what to do and he steps in and does it himself. Like Prabhupada made that point about the temple president. Well, I think once somebody, Prabhupada came along, why isn't this done? And he says, oh, that devotee didn't show up today. Prabhupada says, no, it's your service. In other words, for the president, every service in the temple is his service. And he's responsible to get it all done. Now, the smart thing to do is other people are qualified, they do it. Because how many of those services can you do? So therefore, let's say to do all that, you know, takes 20 people. So he's got all 20 people doing all those services, but he's following up that they're doing it because it's his service. He doesn't micromanage it, but he just sees that they're doing it and they're doing it right. I remember seeing Tamal Krishnamurti. He, when you have a conversation with him, let's say he's trying to work something out, he'll go, okay, if this is the scenario, what would you do? And then you sit in a thing, you go, I do this. First thing that I caught it once, he didn't do it all the time, but one time he went, because he was so absorbed, he went, oh, he was thinking, option D. Huh, that's interesting. So in other words, in his mind, he'd already worked out about 5-10 different ways you could solve this problem. But he was not sure which one to use. So when he asked me and I said, this thing, that was D. That was number 4. But then he doesn't just at that go, no, but what about that? He would just go, why? Why did you choose that? And you'd explain it. Then he would see if there's something of value in it or not. And if there was, then he would take it. And if there's not, then he would understand, okay, this guy doesn't know, I won't ask him, you know, and I'll ask someone else. Or if he's the guy doing it, I'll tell him what to do. You know? And I also had a friend that he was from, you know, one of those top, he went to Harrow. You know, Harrow. Okay, so friends from there, classmates from there. So he meets them after like 20 years. He's a devotee and they're not, but he meets them somewhere. And this guy's working in this top company, you know, in the world. I think it was the number 2 in the world or number 1 in the world for this particular kind of research thing. And he says they have these meetings, 10-minute meetings, where the guy, the head guy walks in, he has his thing, what are the options, has everyone write it down, and that, and then a little bit of discussion. Then he takes it back and looks at the papers. And if any of them make sense, he calls the person. And now you explain this. And he explains it, and if it's good, they get that guy to do it or get it going. And if it's not, he goes on to the next one. So the point is that they're able to listen. Why would you waste your time if someone else can do it? Because then you can do more things. You can expand. There's so many things to be done. But at the same time, that doesn't mean just sit in the office and do nothing. and just think, well, I've told everybody. But if you're not following up, then it's not there. I've seen that so many times, that someone who can't manage, does manage, oh, I delegated it. Yes, but did you follow up? No. And so that's why it didn't work. But they'll say, it's not my fault, I delegated. No, you're in charge, so therefore it is your fault. So there's always a balance. That's the thing in the Vedic system. You have that balance. You know, it's just like the wife is submissive to the husband, right? So then you think, oh, that's all one-sided. But what the husband does is all about the wife. The considerations are all about the wife. So you see, they're both the center of attention. They're both in control, but at the same time, they're both not. It's a cooperation. So that's the Vedic system. Everything is balanced. While the modern, if you take corporate, it's only balanced, and it's only for making money. You take all these other models, it's only for that thing. So the Vedic, the Varnashram, it's all, everything together, how all ashrams and all varnas, in other words, varna means grihastha, right? They're technically, a grihastha is doing a particular thing, Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they're doing that service. But brahmacharis, vanaprastha, sannyasis, that's brahminical. They may have a nature of Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, but the point is, it's going to be always in the context of the ashram. So in other words, a brahmachari is going to do brahmachari stuff. Though within that, he might do education, he might do management, he might do deity worship, he might do cooking, he might do so many different things. But the point is doing that, it's still within the context of the ashram. So that's the whole thing, is that the ashram is the central feature. To place someone, you have to see what their nature. So Prabhupada said varna first. But the point is that varna first doesn't mean varna is more important than ashram. People take it that way. But no, it just means that if you want to engage somebody, you need to know what the varna is. Because that flavor will be there, whatever ashram they're in. And so if you're taking these things into consideration, then you can do it. It's very... So what's the training? Right? Not some corporate thing, because those are tactical skills or technical skills. Point is if you don't know how they're to be used, then it's not like, since we've introduced all this corporate and that, we don't find that the quality of Vaishnava interaction and community is any better. So that means even though they're in the meeting and, you know, trying to be nice and all that, it's still just as political as ever. You know? So that's the whole thing. It's community means you're developing the Vaishnava qualities. That's by Vaishnava association. That's by understanding the philosophy, of course. Like now, we're discussing the philosophy, but in the context of administration and structure. So therefore, then it works. So then one sees, how does it go into one's life? Then you start to see is that when you read these purports, that's why it talks about these things. It's talking about the king, but it's talking about certain elements, the protection of this, the, you know, he's like a father to the citizens and all these things like that. Right? But father to the citizens doesn't mean by touch. Okay.
My wife would have a one question.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you,
Maharaj.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. It's really inspiring, and we would have loved to hear many more days. So my question is, I'm still a little bit doubtful about certain things. So, when it comes to the temple president and services, is it possible in a spiritual society to, by guna and karma, be have the shudra or the artist by, I mean, nature, and at the same time have those services, and what would be the challenges and the weaknesses this one have to be aware of?
Okay, so if we, so you're saying if someone's on the strategic or operational position in the structure, and but they have by nature a Shudra nature. How, you know, okay, so what would be, you know, would they be able to do the service, and what would be their strengths or weaknesses? Okay, so since, as we said, the, you know, we are working in a Vaishnav society. And so then, since the spiritual is the main thing and all that, then technically they could, if they were very advanced. In other words, if they were a neophyte, they wouldn't be able to do it. Right? They would need to be minimum, you know, situated in as nishta. You know, so that's standard. We're not expecting, oh no. You know, it's like Prabhu was saying before, they have the corporate, they have all their definitions of who does what. We can't have a, has to have ruchi. You know, we can't do that. So they would have to be advanced. They would have to have that faith where they're fixed in devotional service and nothing else is important. And based on that, they would be able to inspire everybody else who can do all those different things. So in other words, let's say if they're a GBC, they would then be able to inspire that, for example, the temple presidents in Krishna consciousness, the importance of seeing Krishna consciousness in their environment. They wouldn't be able to answer questions on if the temple president is having a problem with management and stuff like that, or economics, but they could inspire him in the way of being fixed in devotional service themselves, and inspire them to inquire from others who are having success in those areas, like talk to another temple president or talk to some other devotees, or if they're the GBC, they should know their zone and what's there, and then have someone to talk to. Right? Because you would have to know that these aren't areas that you know, unless you have experience from the Shudra angle on those things, and just how people who are assisting in it, how they should behave. You know what I'm saying? They might be able to say how the devotees in the temple who are assisting in the economics or in the administration, how they should assist, but he won't be able to say how to run it because he doesn't have that nature. Right? And there's no need for him necessarily to have the nature, because the point is of the GBC, they're supposed to be advanced in devotional service. It means ideally they should be able to relate to and appreciate management. So let's say if they came from a background where they were a middle manager or a supervisor or stuff, they can relate to management, but they know that they are not the ones that actually know how to make it work. You know, so little things on, you know, your schedule or time saving or this, they might be able to give some advice if they have experience, but otherwise, there's no need. If they can inspire you in devotional service, how to see it, how to make sure that the advancement of the devotees in the temple is priority, you know, and the advancement of the community and people that they're preaching to, like that is a priority, then it'll work. In other words, the GBCs to be able to put things in perspective of, you know, what it is, like what we say. You can't see the forest for the trees, because we might forget about the trees, and just, you know, it means you're so absorbed in the tree or this tree, you can't see that there's other trees in that. And so sometimes you see that, you know, a festival is coming up and the president's so absorbed in getting money or getting this or that, he forgets about other things, and then, you know, it's going on one side and falling apart on the other. You know, it's kind of like Alexander the Great. He conquers a kingdom and all that, puts his, whoever he wants there, then he moves on to the next place. As soon as he moves on, it just goes back to the old management. You know, so you want to see there. So he would just know what he's doing and that from the devotional side. So he could do it. If he's a temple president, he would have to have very good people who can manage. And but because of his devotional stability, others are inspired to work and do their stuff. So it could happen. like that. The other side, the weakness of it, he would have to make sure that he has other senior Vaishnavs, you know, equals, you know, senior to him, that, you know, if he has any difficulties in his service because of dealing with these areas that he may or may not have expertise in, that they can keep him inspired. You know, it's the same position like having, like we said before, on having women in these kind of positions, operational or strategic positions, is not that the knowledge and skills aren't there. Like we saw before, Prabhupada said, Devaki, she knows how to run a kingdom. But the point is you do have the inherent nature, the feminine nature, which means there'll be more mental position than others. A Brahmin woman may be less mental than a Shudra man, but she'll be more mental than a Brahmin man. That's just the way it is. That's how Krishna's made it. So therefore, then she should have strong persons that she can depend upon. That's why in the Vedas it's ideally then a strong husband or this or that, so that when things go weird, then the shelter is there, you can work it all out, and then, you know, back to work. So that, you know, that's not considered in these things. I'll take, oh no, they can both do the same skill. Of course they can both do the same skill. If you have, you know, a head, two arms, two legs, you have, you know, 10 fingers and 10 toes, then you can do most things, you know? And so that's the whole thing, is that if it's taken only on the tactical, what about the higher levels? What about the technical? What about that? What about the pressures that come from that? That you have to be able to deal with. And so there's different. Men go out, and the outside world to them is kind of, it's like water off a duck's back. Nothing bothers them. When they go home, then that's when the emotions and all that. But women, the emotions are home. But when they go out, the emotions are there too. Someone looks at them funny. And why are they looking funny? The guy knows that he always looked funny. That guy always looks like that. Have you ever seen when you get upset with somebody, somebody said something, and the man says, oh, why do you take them so seriously? And then the woman is thinking, well, what are you talking about? You know, are you so insensitive? Because men, when they're in the outside world, that's the way they are. They're not that sensitive. And that's why they're good at going out and dealing with all this insanity, because it doesn't bother them as much. Right? But if there's insanity at home, that bothers them. But insanity at home doesn't bother the woman. But if it's insanity outside, that bothers them. So you have to know that as long as you can see, it will work. Just like I've seen temple presidents have a brahminical nature. And so by nature, they can inspire and everything like that. But many times they don't last. You know, some years go by, but they don't last because they're not good at economics. And so then the temple gets into debt because they did all kinds of nice things. There's lots of devotees. All the devotees are inspired. But because he doesn't see necessarily so importance in it, then it's temple slides into debt. And then when it comes out that it's in debt, then the natural thing of management changed the president. Why don't they just bring in a man who knows how to make money? But it's always the solutions. No, change. And then the whole mood of the temple changes. All those people who were there, vibrant, all go back to their homes. They're community people. They don't like this guy because he's just into money and how much money they can give. And they go back to the thing like that. And that devotee, he's there in community, still there. He does a sadhana, does a few home programs and stuff like that. And like that. I've seen ones that are kshatriyas. Then that nature is that you know, they'll see that means classes that go on, it's formal because it's part of the schedule. You know, they control the money because of, you know, that aspect of management. Like that. But it's not necessarily that it flourishes. But if they can, because they can get other people to do it, they can get people who are like ministers to do everything. But you see, it's a very nice temple. It's a very big temple. Many things go on. Lots of stuff goes on. Very complex stuff. But it's very formal, the temple. It doesn't have that same kind of brightness like when that Brahmin guy ran it. Then you have temples where the Vaishyas running the temple. They have fabulous facilities. You know, whatever is considered the best in ISKCON, they have it. But there's not necessarily a strong program or anything else like that. Unless they understand the importance, then they'll bring in people. I remember one Vaishya temple president like that. Then he used to in India, he used to fly a Chutananda Swami in once a month for a program, and all the life members, everything would come whenever he'd come like that. They knew he'd advertise that Chutananda Swami is coming in. He was in another temple. He'd fly him up. You know, so that was in those days, it wasn't cheap. But he knew his members would be pleased in that. He had prasad at 9 o'clock at night. After the program, after the class, everyone's sitting around. It'd be puris and sabji. Why? Because that's what these life members would eat. Brahmacharis almost died, but whatever it is, you know, he like that. And that temple had the maximum money, maximum members, everybody was involved. It was really happening. But it was all for, he had the best deity worship. Right? Like that. Like somebody would do something like he'd inspire his life membership makers. And because many of them were also kind of Vaishya nature, so for them it's profit. So then he had the thing, you make this many members, you get a car. You drop below that, you lose your car, you take the bus. So everybody had a car. Right? And then when it comes to things, okay, he's done the best, you know, for the marathon and that, made the most members and all that, you know, he wants to, you want to get something for that. So he says, so he was very clever. He says, okay, we can get, you know, we can give you a 5,000 rupee watch, you know, because he needs a watch or something. Or we can give 10,000 rupees for the deities. Right? And so, what's the brahmachari going to do? He's going to choose the deities. And then he had fabulous deity worship, the best. All the members come and this and that. And it means, you know, all these carved wooden shringasans in the movement? That president started that. He found some guys, carved this fabulous thing from there, one by one, every time. And they used to send for them, like that. So he had the best, like that, you know, but it's because of from that thing, you know, how a business guy has the best. So it had that kind of flavor, but it was all around money. If you weren't a collector, you didn't stay there, unless you were the guy that wiped the floor and they only needed two guys for that, not a third. So then if you came to his temple, he would spend money to send you to another temple. I remember sitting there once and this brahmachari comes in, I think from Vrindavan. He comes to the temple and all that, and he says, oh, it's a small place, because it was kind of small. And he said, here, he gave him 10 rupees and says, you know, go to Mayapur. You know, took prasad, left, go to Mayapur. About a month later, the brahmachari comes back. And then he says, like this and that, thinking to stay here. No, still this and that, because he wasn't impressed with the guy. He gave him 100 rupees to go to Delhi. And I was saying, wow, why would he spend that much for this? He says, if this guy stays here, he'll cost me more than 100 rupees. So I'm actually saving money by giving him 100 rupees and sending him off. Because otherwise, he'll stay for a month, he'll make trouble, he'll eat so much prasad, he'll disturb everyone else. I'm going to lose thousands. So when it came to that, the life members means, yeah, they had a name for him that about, you know, that he made money. They considered him, you know, a Marwari. He was as much, if not more, of a Marwari than them. And they respected him for that. And it was a nice temple. So the point is it was a good temple, but he had that nice temple. So I've seen all three, and they're all great temples. So the same way as if someone's, but you see, is there is, whether they're so advanced or not, they're just good at what they're doing and they do it in connection to Krishna, it'll work. So even if they were a neophyte. But for a Shudra to work on that level, they would have to be a Madhyama. Because then it will be the drive of their devotional service, they can make that happen. Does that make sense?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah, so it can work. But it's just, you have to know how it's working, and everybody needs to know what's their strength and weakness. And then in regular times, you stick to what you're good at. But if it's emergency, everybody has to do whatever has to be done. But that's important to note, is that I've seen some presidents say, oh, it doesn't matter. And then they'll get somebody to do something that they're not good at, and they can do it for some days or some weeks or even some months, but then the president, oh, just surrender, you're not this body and all that, and they leave. And the president actually thinks, you know that they're right in saying, well, we're very sincere. Was the president No, you can't do that. You have to know that they have this nature. Therefore, as a regular service, they do this, and as an emergency, yeah, anybody can do anything. Like Baba says, when there's fire, everybody comes out and puts out the fire. So one has to balance all these things. So that's why there's the higher up you go, the greater the responsibility and the broader you have to see. So if you're working in the strategic, you have to see the whole thing. You know, if you're working the operational, you have to know the whole thing, but your focus is on your whole thing. Tactical will be in there, operational. This is my service, I do it nicely. Right? And so if you, unless you have that inherent nature, you have to have... Does that make sense? So we get things done, we situate ourselves, we purify our nature so that it's actually you chanting and hearing. Because otherwise, then it won't work. You know what I'm saying? Because just because you have a nature doesn't mean you can use it in Krishna's service. Does that make sense?
Yes, my life. It's very clear. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
When you use the word of the Kamayan, is that like for you?
Brahminical and Vaishnava do go together because the Vaishnava is automatically brahminical. So on the ashram side, all devotees are brahminical. But what I'm talking about here, from what I understand, you know, it's just like as Vaishnavas, any devotee, let's say in the temple, could do an artik or do an offering, you know, especially if it's just like, let's say, for a festival. You know, you're having a big festival and this and that. So, okay, this guy will do the offering, this on the artik, this guy makes the plate, this one will do the kirtan and all that. And that once a day a year, anybody can do. Or, you know, even once a week they can do or that. But would they be able to do six artiks and offerings a day and wake up and put the deities to sleep? No. Someone who has a brahminical nature could. Or, if they're very advanced as a devotee, then based on that Vaishnava nature, then they could do. But then you would see in their business.
Recording in progress.
But he may not be able to run a class where you're trying to go through a certain study material. Does that make sense? So you have to know is that when it comes to regular service, that you would see by their varna. But knowing Krishna and being absorbed in Krishna and being that kind of thing, that everybody in the movement can do. It just depends on their advancement, that's all.
Thank you very much.
Is that okay? Yes. Haribol.
Ananda Chaitanya. Yes, one of the really senior, he was the regional secretary, like I said, founded the Litunia Yatra, he's been doing a number of services, traveling preacher, coming to Finland, now placed in the, are you called the Harinam?
Yes, Bruno. Yes, pick up four. Oh.
Are you called it another Chaitanya? Is it called now?
Yes, I'm online.
Harinam, how is the monastery called there now? And Lithuania
it's the monastery of the Holy Name. Mm-hmm.
So he's there together with Ananda Vardhana Maharaj, who is one of our good old friends here from Finland. So
he's in charge here, Ananda Vardhana Maharaj. He's in charge here of the brahmacharis.
How many brahmacharis you now have?
It varies, but around 15. Because most of them, they are from different countries, Ukraine, Russia, so they are dependent on the visas. So when the visa is expired, they have to leave or renew their visas. And meantime, because of political tensions, it's not always easy for them to extend their visas. So, taking advantage of the situation, I wanted to again thank you, express our deepest gratitude to His Holiness Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj, who so nicely present us the subject. And a few things, especially every time, I enjoy it very, very much, your seminars, and a few things which I appreciate and enjoy very much is that how nicely you teach us how to glorify the seniors, senior Vaishnavas and ISKCON senior Vaishnavas, pointing out their best or their qualification of which they are best known in ISKCON. So it's one of the ingredients of cooperation. If we don't appreciate Vaishnavas around us, then how we can cooperate with them? So thank you for that. Also, what I very much appreciate is that how strong Buddhi Agni you have, able to digest the knowledge and present us the product. It's always you can offer your guest some nice fruits and nice berries or whatever, but if a devotee or Vaishnava cooks something out of those products, you present the preparation. So preparation is always much more tasty than the some product. So you cook for us, you take knowledge, and you cook for us the wisdom, and you present your feast in the form of wisdom. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate that very much. Also, yesterday I wrote from Bhagavatam one nice shloka, which I would like to present to you as a glorification, where in the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, which is the chapter 48, where Krishna pleases his devotees. So Krishna devotees are expert in pleasing the devotees. So the shloka goes on that, Nahyam mayani tirthani, nadeva mrich chilamayaha, te punant uru kalina, darshanad eva sadhavaha. So no one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers, or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone, but these purify the soul only after a long time. Whereas saintly persons purify just by being seen. So thank you, Maharaj, for your darshan, for your wisdom, for your wisdom feasts, which I hope we enjoyed, all of us, very much. And we'll be anxiously waiting for the next seminar organized by His Grace Tattvavada Prabhu, and thank him for the organizational team which nicely organized this seminar on Zoom. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpatirubhya shakri pasindubhya vachu patita nam pavanebhya vaishnadebhyo nama namaha ananta koti vaishnavake
ja
ja
Holiness Bhakti Vidyapurna Maharaj ke
ja.
So before Tapas is saying the other words of gratitude before Maharaj stop, our dear technical manager, Dhamma Mata, you have some remindings. Please take those to your heart and seriously as you can, according to the limit you can.
Yes, so just if anybody else wants to send a donation, the details were sent through, but if anyone didn't receive them, please let me know or touch the Vada Prabhuna and we can give you the details to transfer. Thank you.
And I would say that there is no option of not giving any donation, only just the amount. Like me and my wife, we have spent our all money on this holiday already for preaching tours, so we will donate in the beginning of the August, 180 of us. So you can a little prolong, the bank account lasts longer, but basically saying there is no option of not giving any donations, is that's just to be the mode of ignorance. So, tapasji.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, I was thinking about this. I would, first of all, appreciate the consistency of your preaching for many, many years. I was thinking about Radhanath Maharaj. He has also had a certain emphasis, priority, which he has consistently preached for 30 years, as long as I have known about. And I see the same thing in you, and together, all you very empowered, sincere servant of Srila Prabhupada is contributing different aspects of the whole picture, of the whole knowledge, the body of knowledge that Srila Prabhupada has given. And unless somebody consistently preaches over a long time, and that is very necessary, like Srila Prabhupada has written 60 books and many times similar things are repeated, and we need to hear this. I can see, I've heard seminars from you now quite a few years, and it's necessary to hear over and over again that it sinks in. And I see this potency of what it's easier to be attracted to Krishna than to leave Maya. So I very much appreciate that you have the ability to remove simply material conceptions which we have, because we have grown up in a actually demoniac civilization with all kinds of created misconceptions, which actually are weeds. Sometimes it looks like the bhakti lot or devotional, but it's actually weeds, and it takes an expert to separate those weeds from the real plant. And you've done a great service and in this regard to help us free from this, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur called ancient and modern prejudices, which is an aspect of asatsanga. Asatsanga is not just to move together with devotees, but it's to remove concepts which are not Krishna conscious, which may look Krishna conscious, but which are not. And we need the help of an expert, a swan, who can separate the milk from the mixture of milk and water. So thank you very much for that. Hare Krishna.
Jai Hare. Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, could you kindly, how would I say, summarize, whether today's message, which the Roman question, or whatever you would like to a little, since we don't have a study material,
we are, you know, how would I say, to structure the whole thing, it's always, we are listening those lectures, at least myself, every day after the seminar also, and it gets together, but whatever you like to.
Okay. Basically, you see, is that Krishna, you know, caring about the living entities, then he comes to the material world to perform his pastimes. And then we see that in Kali Yuga, then he comes himself as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to also attract the living entities. So then he has these three features where he's, you know, the attraction that is there for him, the activities that are there, that affection for him. And so then in his movement, that comes out as the Jiva Doya, the Vaishnav Seva, and the Nama Ruchi. So that Jiva Doya, the kindness to the living entities, then that's how to bring them in contact with Krishna, how to cultivate them, how to inspire them in that. Then Vaishnav Seva, associating with the devotees, taking advantage of that association, and in that way becoming more and more inspired in both serving, you know, having compassion on the living entities and in developing Nama Ruchi, or taste for the holy name. Because in that taste, that's where then Krishna then gets his greatest pleasures, that the living entities interact with him. Because ultimately that they're coming in contact, they're associated with Vaishnavas, all this is very pleasurable to Krishna. But when all that comes together, then because it's not that it's one or the other, it means Jiva Doya, then there's also going to be the Vaishnav Seva. Then when you add in Namaruchi, then there's all three. And so that's then what is trying to be obtained by the whole process. And so then in that, then that means individuals may catch, like you see in other ages, individuals are very qualified. And then they catch these things and they practice themselves. And through the performance of their duties, the great kings and that will have some influence in that, the Brahmins and that. But you see in Kali Yuga specifically, then everything's done according to the founder Acharya, in which then a whole structure of a society is put together so that the maximum number of living entities can be exposed to and practice in the association of Vaishnavas, that they develop a taste for the holy name. And so then that the whole point is about pleasing Krishna. And then about, you know, how you organize things that does those activities that please Krishna. And that means then you have to have a background of the knowledge and skills and understanding the relationships and structure in which that can be done. So that all naturally all comes together. Then we see very nicely for us, then as the ISKCON Society, given by the founder Acharya. And it's important to understand, when founder Acharya, it's not just, oh, well, he's our guru, so he's the founder Acharya. In a sampradaya, they have a founder Acharya. And it's not that because he's there, others before him aren't important or not senior, like you see with Ramanuja Acharya. He is the founder Acharya in the Sri line. So therefore, before him is Yamunacharya, before that is the Alwars. So those are all the senior, the previous Acharyas and everything like that. But the point of the founder Acharya is he's able to show you what is the essence of what the Lord and the devotees are teaching. So what the Lord, what the scriptures, what the Vaishnavas are preaching, and how to, you can use that in your life to attain that same position that the Acharyas are having in their relationship in service with the Lord. So it's very important. So sometimes it's, oh no, how can you say Prabhupada? It would be Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. No, it's Rupa Goswami would be the founder. Oh no, how can you say that? It's Brahma is the founder. None of this. This is all not. In the line, someone comes and shows. Prabhupada shows how you approach and understand what Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, how Bhakti Vinod Thakur, how Vishwanath Thakur, this, how it all holds together. Because otherwise, without that, then one will think that they're saying different things. I've even seen devotees in writing their papers and this and that. They say, oh, Vishwanath says this and Baladev says that and, you know, Narottam, and how do we work it all out? And that means because you're not following the founder Acharya. That's why you can't work it out. So the founder Acharya, it's all perfectly there. That's why we see in our studies, we always study Prabhupada's books, along with the books of the Acharyas, that you see they're saying exactly the same thing. But Prabhupada's worded it so nice and clearly, because the principle is always the easiest, the simplest. As you come down, the detail gets more and more, it becomes more complicated. So Prabhupada's speaking at that level of strategy, that this is how it works. And then uninformed individuals, they decide that, oh, it's so simple, so by the inductive methods, that means it's lower. So now I'm giving more technical details, so I'm higher. But these are just fools and rascals. Or they're behaving at least that way. So we have to appreciate that, no, the founder has said so, that everybody can understand. And so that's then the whole idea, is that then that comes down, that understanding comes down. You know, it's made practical by the operational heads. It's then followed up and served very nicely by the tactical and technical individuals. And then that whole thing's overseen by that strategic aspect, that the founder Acharya's teachings and the teaching of the Acharyas, that's what is driving the movement. That's how everything's being decided, and not on some other kind of consideration. Means other things can assist, like it says. It means performance of your duties to Varnashram, as long as they assist them in service to the Lord, they're great. But if they get in the way, what's the point? You know, so their only value is this connection. So that way then we see everything in that context of how it assists, how the services we do, the duties, our different knowledge, our different attachments, everything like this, how we can engage in the Lord's service, then everything becomes perfect. And if we try to see that on their own they have a value, then it will always be a distraction. So, you know, as Tapas Prabhu pointed out, you know, these things have been discussed for a long time. And so, as he said, it takes time. That's why the process is there. The Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya means we're regularly here, and then like that, then all these doubts. Because what's the problem? There are doubts and misgivings. When those are removed, then it becomes very clear and very obvious. So that's the whole thing. By that regular association, by the regular discussions, then our doubts, and then it becomes very clear what's to do and how to do and who we are and who's Krishna and what's the material world and how we relate to each other. Then it becomes very wonderful. So, you know, we thank all of you for the opportunity to be able to discuss on these things, because it's not also, you don't always see it that on this level of how the administration connects with the philosophy and our lifestyle and all that. You don't necessarily have that many individuals who are that, you know, worried about it. So to have a group where you can sit and discuss these things very nicely, then that's also a very wonderful opportunity. So we should see it's not a regular thing. So that all these devotees, you all come together, this is very nice, and so we thank you for all this and the opportunity, and that, you know, that we can have some assist in some way in this Sangha. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.